This is the final episode of the five-part series about the science behind how cats eat. In episode 5, Dr. Carol Smea teaches us the science behind the feline eyes and how they view the world. I hope you've enjoyed this educational series, and please hit that subscribe button. Let us know what you think. I'm Jay.
I'm Adrian.
And together we are
the Two Crazy Cat Ladies.
I'm going to cut you.
I think I just peed.
Buckle up. We're back in the closet.
I got the eye of the tiger and ready, dancing through the fire. Hello, 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 and welcome everyone to this very special episode. It's the last episode of a series that we have been doing for the past, like, what, 6 months?
That we have had the privilege of having the incredible Dr. Carol Smea to actually share the science behind our beautiful little predatory beastie friends.
And how they eat and how their all of their everything works, right? We went over the how, what was
if
the first
you
one?
Can the pull wild. This out, I'm gonna be amazed.
We went over the wild child, right? The wild that's actually within our cats at the very
their
beginning.
DNA.
We went over their whiskers. She Dr. Smea taught us about their nose, exactly how their nose works, taught us all the stuff and things. What was the other one? The whiskers. I just said it today to
ears.
Oh, and the ears.
Oh
yes. That was
the pocket.
Yeah. And where we discussed
all the
science behind our cat's ears. And today, Ooh. Tonight, guys, we are going to be discussing
Stephanie's
the cat's eye.
The eye
of the tiger.
Dr. Smea, for everyone that might be joining, it has been way too long. First of all, we were doing this like once a month, and then life and schedules got in the way, so it's been a hot minute. So for any newbies that are joining us here, could you please share a little intro of who you are, how you are spending your life changing the world? No pressure.
Okay, wait, let me get my book out, okay?
I knew you had a book.
No, it has been an absolute privilege. And for those of you who may not have heard about this before, basically, I have a PhD in psychology and sociology, and I use this information in the corporate food world for quite a while, understanding human feeding patterns and working with government institutes like the National Cancer Institute and the FDA, sort of understanding how we can improve diets. And it was from my little dog, Pippers, shortly after we first got her, little Havanese, 14 pounds that packed a punch. She used to inhale her food. And in probably about a half a minute and would let out a belch the size of a 300-pound football player that it would bring people to their knees and have tears streaming down. And one night I was making her chicken breasts and there were scraps and juices left on the board. And so my daughter said, well, don't throw those away, give them to Pip. Well, this dog who usually inhaled her food for the next 20 minutes was circling, licking, sniffing. And I told my husband when he got home and he said, Eureka. So I took the time to go back and study how wolves and wildcats eat in the wild and took those instinctive feeding patterns because the DNA of dogs and cats with their ancestors is so very similar. And when you look at their sensory components and their movements, there's a great similarity between them. So we took that knowledge and spent probably over a year going through different designs. So the shape of the pet platter, the material, which is made with cellulose fiber, the scoops that resemble the ends of bones, the ridges, which resemble sort of the rib cage, every single element of the pet platter is done to reflect an actual carcass. Because if you give a carcass to your cat, you see an entirely different world take place with them. So what we try to do is to let them be who they really are, which is an animal who enjoys that carcass type feeling of exploration, conquering, and really engaging it in the way they see fit. So I'm hoping that with all this information tonight, by better understanding who our cats are, you're going to create a new feeding scenario that is going to bond you with your cat and is going to create happiness for your cat. And this is one of the special projects that I'm working on, are what are the core components to bringing happiness to your pet? And we're going to be sharing more information on that, of course, with you guys, because you just bring happiness to everybody.
No, that's all you. I have to say, so for any newbies here, we had the amazing, amazing experience of getting to meet you IRL at last Super Zoo. And we were instant kindred spirits. And I think it's because your whole spirit and purpose is to really better understand these beautiful beings that we bring in as our companions in our life. And when we think, and food is such a big thing, think about it for us. We went out to a business meeting last night for dinner and a couple cocktails, let's be honest. But anytime food brings us together. Oh my God, what are you going to order? Oh my God. And our pets have to eat the same shit from the same... Do you understand what I'm saying? So the fact that you've really invested all of this in bringing that kind of enrichment to something so foundational is so important.
That should be a happy experience, yes. Right? Like it is in the wild eating, as we all know, right? That eating is one of their most pleasurable experiences. And so for you to be able to bring that back into our homes with this Mind Pet Platter is Eureka genius. Yes.
It is Eureka.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know what? I hope people take a minute to realize that, you know, we changed their feeding ecology. When you look at it originally, they killed their prey, ate their carcasses. Then as pets drew in to be more functional in human life, we sort of did the scatter feeding, which still wasn't optimal, but there was a certain amount of exploration and foraging and things like that. And then all of a sudden, once we brought them inside, what do? We take their food and put it in a bowl. And bowl feeding is nothing more than convenience driven based on our perspective of how they should eat. Mm-hmm. So by understanding all of the sensory components of cats, it's going to open up a whole new feeding experience for you and them.
You exactly. Might say it really opens your eyes.
I was waiting for that one, Jay. I saw it coming in her eyes.
I love this so much because I remember, I think it was more than a year ago, understanding more about our cat's eyes. And I think it's so foundational, not just a window into their beautiful souls, but how they work as a species. And it is very different. You know, we talk a lot about the fact that cats are not small dogs.
Right.
And this is a really big differentiator.
Yes.
So I'm going to take it. So for anyone just joining us right now, hi, Judith. Hi, Madison. For anyone just joining us right now, Jana Lee is in the house.
Woo! Hello, Jana and Rob. Hello.
Oh, my God,
hello.
Mr. Milligan.
All right.
So for anyone just jumping on, tonight is all about the incredible science behind cats' eyes. And Dr. Smail, I'm going to let you take it from here.
Okay. Well, just to bring everybody on board again, I want everybody to start thinking about where we've been, talking about the true wild child, realizing that they're most identical ancestral to the North African, Southwest Asian wild cat. And the amazing thing about... the cat is that the genome between these two species is almost identical. There's been very little artificial selection involved in it. And while we have like 370 breeds of dogs, there's only about 60 to 70 of cats. And most of it has to do with the type of markings on their fur. So this is how they differ from dogs as well, but that's a fascinating fact. In terms of whiskers, providing really critical input, it gives radar and navigation and actually allows the cat to feel ear temperature, ear pressure, ear changes. All of these things are important to catching prey. Yeah. And then the nose, of course, they see the world through their noses. But what makes cats unique again are their V1R receptors. And cats have 30 of them. Dogs only have 9 and humans only have 2. The V1R receptor is so critical because they can actually differentiate between smells. Yeah. And that is amazing.
It is. Well, I was going to say, just explain that for just a second, because when we had that episode two months ago, it was what was the distance again? So V1R receptor sounds very scientific and whatever, but when it comes to cats, like in a real life scenario, what are we looking at?
In terms of?
It was like the distance.
The distance smeller?
Yeah, to be able to differentiate between different smells.
Like how far away can they smell? Is that what you're saying?
So, yeah. Right. So they're able to, I think you said it was like 1 or 3 inches.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But they're able to literally be able to tell. So you think about dogs. Dogs are used, like you think about dogs being out there for everything that requires scent. And yet cats, and they have only 9. And cats have how many?
30.
30.
Yeah.
I think it's so fascinating. And such a great point, too, when it comes to their food, because I do think when we give them their food and you put it in a bowl where all the aromas are very condensed in this place that they have to stick their face into, it can be very overwhelming. So you have this, you can, that one fact was so illuminating to me when it comes to spreading out their options and giving them, you know, because they can smell everything.
Yep.
Because, you know, when they deconstruct carcasses, they select the foods that they want to eat first, second, third, fourth. When you're stuffing it into a bowl, I called it holding their food hostage.
Yeah.
Okay. They can't interact with it. They can't use their most powerful sensory component. Right. To assess and say, gee, do I want this first or second? Which is why bowl dumping is so common, because they realize there's like different smells, but it's very confusing because it's all sitting on top of one another. Mm-hmm. So the one simple thing you can do is to spread different types of food across the platter and let that nose engage in it and let them do the food selection. There is no greater stimulation to their brain than when it comes to food selection, because Mother Nature programmed that to survive in the wild. This yep. helps their survival instinct. So bowl feeding just shuts all of that down. And it basically says, we don't care about you, how you're designed to explore and interact with your food. Here it is. So this one simple thing you can do, you're going to see amazing dynamics from your cat when they eat.
I have to say, just a tiny little side note. I know we're still just reviewing the first parts of the series, and we're getting to the eyes shortly, you guys. But we did find, and we haven't even had a chance to really tell you all about this beautiful new being that is in our lives, a little Miss Annie Olivia, a kitten that we found. And she... really had an issue with food. She wasn't really eating. The first day, we brought her a pet platter and we gave her the options. And within 3 days tops, she was eating the raw food. We had to start with kibble. We had to start with kibble just
because
to get her to
she wasn't eating anything. So we went out and got like samples of kibble and we were like, will she eat this? And she did. She ate the kibble. So we're like, okay, that's where we're starting.
Right.
Now, we move her onto something different and all
food.
With the pet platter. She's got the yellow one and all with the mine pet platter. We started putting some wet food there and she's like, oh, okay, that's food too. And then started eating it. Then within 3 days we put raw food beside it and she would go for the wet food. And then she would be like,
oh,
and now
here.
I will say morning on her platter, I put wet food beside it and raw food. So she's having like a charcuterie board every day, right? Like she gets like this certain whatever. And she goes in and she smells the wet food. And then she goes for the raw food and she eats it and leaves the wet food sitting there. And it's so awesome to see that she really likes having those options on that platter.
And the power of the nose. I mean, I think that it's just that it is their natural, you talk about their DNA, talk about the wild child, talk about all of that. Mm-hmm. they know what their bodies need. And to watch her make such a transition in such a short period of time, just by giving her the option, was really incredible. To watch her sniff it out and get the good stuff, it's really incredible. Okay. So the nose is incredible.
The other thing is, you never want to have food piled high where the food is going to go up into the mucous membrane and interfere with their scent and also potentially dry it out. When you basically do that, when you're letting elements get in their nose, it's like not allowing them to see. And any behavioral reaction you get from that, you know, it's uncomfortable. They can't see the world. And as we're going to talk about their eyesight, cats' vision is entirely different from all other animals. And we have to help them visually as much as possible. And we'll be talking about some of that as well. The last one we did, though, was Wired for Sound.
Yes.
And I have to say this. I thought I was going to have an answer about Henry's pocket today.
Duh.
We found somebody who we think will have the answer, but they are in Africa right now and we can't reach them.
Ah!
Hopefully.
That just means a follow-up.
You know what? We're going to have a Henry's pocket party. Okay.
Yes.
Well, anyone who wonders what Henry's pocket is go take a look at your kitty right now. At the base of their ear, you're going to notice a little like felty, pocket. Sweet little pocket, right? And nobody really knows. You really did a great job of kind of explaining how it does work for sound, but nobody really knows why it's called Henry's pocket. And there's still some mystery about that. So
about its purpose.
Yeah. And it is
lots of ideas
and adorable. So it's one of my favorite questions about cats.
I think there's one viable answer that we're getting to, but we're really digging deep into evolutionary aspects of the cat's ears now.
Okay.
And the really interesting thing, I don't know if I talked about it before, but the inside of the cat's ears actually is sort of rough and corrugated. You may not feel that, but it is, to direct the sound in a different way that the brain can interpret it. So the way sound comes in and is transmitted and all of that is very complicated, but I'm not going to give anything away because when this comes out, we're throwing a party, okay?
There's going to be press releases. That's going to be a whole thing.
But, you know, the interesting thing, everybody is like, you know what? I've always wondered about that.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't.
We're not giving up on that, but I think we may have somebody who will at least get us to probably the best explanation possible. And we've already sent notifications, so hopefully within the next few weeks we'll get that. I also want the pet parents to understand that their ears are very critical. It is basically satellite dishes, but unlike us and even dogs, they have 32 muscles in each ear, and they can operate them independently. So they are picking things up. And that's really important because with the pet platter, and we'll talk more about this with the vision, they can, if they hear something, they can angle the ear to say, is this threatening or not? So it sort of gives them an open territory to get that sound information. So you have this extraordinary sensory circuit coming together. And given that they are lone hunters, is it surprising at all that even vision is coming together to basically make them 100% self-sufficient?
Yeah.
They don't have any backup in their hunting world. And like we talked about before, people who think they're domestic cats, you know, are not wild, just put them out there for a while. Even my little Havanese Pip, who, you know, couldn't hurt anything. She saw a bunny, she was off and running. That was it.
Right.
That prey drive instinct kicks in And we also talked about, which I found fascinating, that even with cats having a meal in front of them, if they hear a mouse in another area, that their ears pick up on that sound, they will leave their meal, go kill the mouse. They'll leave the mouse there for later and come back to their meal.
Isn't that crazy?
So all of this comes together to just show you instinct and the senses are guiding the cat all along the way.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's such an insight too into behavior as well, right? I mean, it is so fascinating to me when people are like, I don't understand why my cat is doing this. When you realize how instinct driven they are, just basically about everything that they observe and experience, it really helps to better understand them. Like you said, build that bond. You know, it's hard to be best friends with a being that you really don't understand. So this is this is so insightful. And I just think that it's so valuable to have all of these, you know, there's so much more, but these basic, you know, their sight, their scent, their ears, their DNA. It is amazing to me to really kind of digest it all and understand, oh, well, that helps explain it.
But it, you know, what's so amazing is when you look at each animal, and I'm going to talk about other animals' eyes as well, they are all structured for survival and for being able to adapt to that prey drive and to live. And that's why one of the most important things I want people to take away is your cat will know how to survive in the wild. They know the foods they need, the minerals they need, all the behaviors you see in their eating world, they are programmed for survival. So paying attention to that and giving them a platter to sort of self-select opens up their world.
Yep.
Opens it up.
I love it. I love it so much. Okay.
Opens their eyes.
It opens their eyes.
Okay, are we going to sing the eye song again? Or what do you think?
Jay was better on the first row.
I just don't know. I know I got the eye of the tiger. I don't actually know the lyrics.
Oh, God.
Okay,
well, one of the things, I'm going to kind of break this down into easy nuggets because the eye is very complicated and we don't need to get into all the nitty gritty. But I think there are some core components that we're going to walk away with a lot of learning from. And of course, the first is that they have excellent vision in dim lighting. In fact, they can see 6 times better in dim light than humans do. And the first thing I want to talk about, and this is amazing, is that cats' pupils are 50% larger in diameter than humans to allow more light to enter. When you think about that, the cat has the largest eyes of any meat eater. And I've found an interesting fact from Dr. John Bradshaw. He's an amazing guy. He was the one that really stated it firmly. A cat's eye is almost as large as a human's eye. The cat's eye is almost as large. And when you consider their skull and our skull,
right,
that's extraordinary. So I did a little more digging saying, okay, so proportionality wise, if we had cat's eyes, how big would our eyes be to have cat eyes? And what do you think it is in terms of size, inches across?
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm going to go big or go home. I am home. 5 inches.
That's what about you? I mean, I was like
proportionally, like think about it. We're like
proportionally. Having their eye capability, but in our size.
We're like 40 times bigger than cats. So if we had eyes the size of cats' eyes, how big would they be on our face?
I don't know. I guess.
I'm going with 5 inches. Going with,
that's huge though. That's
big
huge. So like,
if they're balls. Bigger, what, like, what is it? What
two?
Is it?
8 inches in diameter.
We need to do it. We need to hold up. Hold
Someone up. Make a picture of that for
us. Hold up. So if we put my face to this picture right here, you wouldn't even like
your eyes would be the same. Essentially.
I would be like an alien.
Janice has <A's> face.
But this just shows you, I mean, the power of their eyes for their size skull. And the other interesting thing is that they have several eye muscles in the eye that allow them to do that wide range of motion, opening their pupils and closing them. Okay, extraordinary.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, I don't know if I have the answer.
No, in my rudimentary research on the cat eye, a human pupil can dilate up to a 15-fold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what I found was that a cat's pupil can dilate up to 135-fold. Is that true?
That is correct. It's amazing.
Isn't that incredible? I mean,
wow.
Which
like, I knew they were amazing, like crazy, but wow.
But that makes sense though, thinking about the size of their eye.
Yep.
And the fact that, you got to talk about the pupils in general.
Oh, no. No, but, I mean, this is really extraordinary. And they have the largest eyes of any meat eater. And a part of this clearly is driven by the fact that they're lone hunters.
Right.
They have to be self-sufficient. So many of these really extraordinary traits, how powerful or how strong, relates to the fact that they're alone in the forest or wherever. They are self-sufficient. Their sensory circuit is designed for a lone hunter. That's why they're so unique.
Wow.
I thought that was fun. I'm going to get you guys eyes for.
Yes, I know. Seriously. Like some big.
Everyone's all about the cat
basically
ears.
Basically, aliens all of a sudden, right?
When we go to cat conventions, everyone's always like wearing the cat ears. We're gonna bring the cat eyes.
There you go.
8-inch eyeballs.
This is how big your.
This is how big
your eyes are.
I love it. I love it. Well, secondly, another thing that makes their ability to see in different types of lighting is the fact that they have vertical pupils, which Adrian loves, I know. And it gives them not only the ability to see in dim light, but also not to be blinded by the sunlight during the day. So again, their ability with their eyes are focused around their hunting prey, which is usually at dusk or dawn. So that's why their ability with the vertical eye becomes so important. And there was a really, if anybody is interested in looking in this any further, a recent study has been done at UC Berkeley. And they have actually shown that the pupil shape is related to animals, where they stand in the ecological structure. The professor who wrote this is Martin Banks, and it's in Science Advances. But what he found is that vertical slits are related to ambush predators.
Yes.
Okay. And this is where they are typically short and closer to the ground. And that vertical pupil becomes so very important. Their binocular vision, because their eyes are close together, that vision works better at judging differences when there's a vertical contour at a distance. And that's how cats hunt. Okay, so the eye is designed to allow them to see prey that is away, because remember, they can't see anything actually within a couple of inches of them. Okay. They cannot see that at all. They use the whiskers at that time for any detection or assessment in combination with the nose.
Right.
So that vertical contour, okay, allows them to see at distances. So it's for ambush prey. And it's also animals who are closer to the ground because their real early ancestors of lions and tigers, they have round pupils. They don't have vertical pupils. And the reason for that...
Say that again.
Lions and tigers who were their much earlier ancestors prior to the wildcat, okay? They have round pupils. They are active foragers and they chase their prey. So their field of vision is entirely different. What is required?
I love this so much.
Okay. So when you go to the zoo or something, look at lions and tigers, then go look at the wildcats and you'll be able to see the differences between their eyes. And again, it's related to how they hunt, the time of day, their size, and what they need to survive. It all comes together. Wow. Now, horizontal slits. Okay, what animals have horizontal slits?
Wait, time out. Before you do this, because I love this, but could you name a
few? You love the eye. I swear to God.
I love this so much because it's so insightful for our little domestic babies to realize that they are made to be ambush hunters. Could you, in your research, could you name just a few other ambush hunters species that are out there
that
have the vertical pupils?
Sure. Crocodiles. Foxes. But wolves have round eyes.
Yes.
So the size of the animal, how close they are to the ground.
Wow.
So my favorite though was also crocodiles for sure.
Snake. The gecko? Oh, the snakes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm 25 years of having cats. Never, ever realized that or realized why that was so, right? Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay.
I'm going to take you through some more, though. The horizontal slits are most common to plant-eating animals. Okay. And basically, they have the side of their heads. And by having them on the side, it expands the field of view and aligns with the ground. And it also blocks the overhead sun. They're worried about being attacked by other animals. They need to be able to see around them. So horizontal eyes. And here's the other thing, they can rotate them to get it level to the ground. So they can actually see if something's coming up on them.
They can spot an ambush hunter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're putting these pieces together.
I love this so much.
I'm like, how do you know all of this? Like, what were you doing today when you were supposed to be working? You were like doing all of this research. Like, how do you know this shit? Like, I wait for this moment where I get to learn from Dr. Carol Smea. Like, I just sit here and wait. And Adrian's like, I know.
I did a tip on how our cats have vertical pupils like a year and a half ago. But it was fascinating to realize. I never even thought about how they're around pupils. Horizontal pupils, vertical pupils. And why is that? I mean, that's fascinating. Someone had to be really creative to come up with that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Fascinating. I mean, but it all fits together. And this is why if you have a pet, understanding their ancestors becomes so critical to understanding who they are, which is why we did the pet platter based on instinctive feeding habits. It's all about them.
I love
this. So all of this comes together. Now, the circular pupils are linked more to the active foragers and animals that chase prey, like wolves and lions. But this is one of the things that I found really interesting. These are not the only types of shapes that exist. There are many different types. For example, the cuttlefish has a pupil in the shape of a W.
Excuse me?
Dolphins have crescents. And frogs have heart-shaped pupils.
Stop! Frogs have heart-shaped pupils?
They're one of those animals.
Once you start looking into this, I mean, it's fascinating. And we're going to talk about other animals as we go through some of the structure of the eye. But again, nature has constructed itself in such a way for survival, the ability to access food, and based on their hunting skills, how they hunt, and their size and position to the ground, all of that comes into play. And it's fascinating.
Wow.
Oh my God.
This is fascinating.
Did not know about the W's or the, what did dolphins have?
A crescent.
What?
Crescent shape. But I'm going to talk about dolphins again because there's something really interesting about them. But we'll keep on going through. The third thing is, and probably most people know about this, is that they, in terms of their retina, they have a larger number of rods, which are light sensing in the back of the eye. And the larger number of rods becomes very important because it also gives them superior motion detection. And the number of rods they have, again, is more extreme because they're lone hunters. This allows them to see even small movements in far distances. So when your cat reacts to something, it may be a fly off in the distance, but the movement, they catch it.
Yeah. Which explains a lot to us cat parents, right? Like, everybody's like, it must be a ghost that they're seeing, but probably it's just a tiny little gnat that we didn't even see that they detected immediately.
Or it could be a ghost. I mean, I think some of our cats do see ghosts.
I think their eyes also see ghosts.
So another key element of the eye, and I know Adrian loves this one, is that cats have the tapetum lucidum, which is located in the back of the eye, which is made of cells with crystals. And these crystals act like a little mirror to reflect light back to the retina to get that light in there for a second time. So again, they can see in very dim or dawn or dusk situations. And the feline tapetum lucidum is made of riboflavin, which is vitamin B. And it has a reflective component in it, but that's what that is made out of. And it gives them the ability to reflect that light forward and then bring it back in the retina. So similar to dogs have slits on the sides of their nose, and that's to bring smell back in for a second time. In terms of cat eyes, the reflection allows that light to come back into the retina for a second time to allow them basically to see in the dark.
Wow. So would you then say that cats, I mean, is it true that cats are nocturnal?
Well, we talked about this, that this was one of our first topics. Do you remember it?
Huh? I do, because we've always thought they're crepuscular, right. I do think that there's a strong argument for them being most active at dawn and at dusk. If anyone has a domestic cat, they know 4 a.m. is the is a really exciting time
they
for
them.
They
tend to sleep with right? us.
That's their hunting, time.
And late.
However, they have the ability to.
But if your cat goes back to being feral, they adapt and their eyes will adapt as well.
See, so, just amazing beings.
It is. It's really just a different situation altogether. And any animal who is somehow lost and has to survive in the wild, they always find a way to do it. So if they didn't have that instinctive ability to be who, a wild version of themselves, they would never be able to survive. There's hundreds and thousands of stories of cats and dogs doing just that.
Yep.
It's amazing.
It is.
Now, it's not to say that, if they're domesticated for a long time, that skill or that ability may weaken a little bit. But once they're back out again, they're not going to have a problem. So Now, this whole reflective capability then gives that eye shine, which they're famous for. When you walk into the dark and you see the cat eyes sticking.
Yeah, we call them glow balls. We're like, look at those, especially on our black cats, right? It's like when it's dark, we don't really see
you
them.
You can't see them at all. We just see their glow balls.
Well, the other interesting thing is that people oftentimes think that eye shine is either yellow, green, or yellow, orange. But one of the things that I found out is that the color can vary just the color of their irises. So there is no one eye shine color. It can be unique.
Really?
So the green eyes and the blue eyes also.
Yeah.
How amazing.
Yep.
Wow.
So a few more things. We talked about cats having binocular vision, which gives them the ability to judge distances and to pick out prey from the background. And the importance of this is that they have to have correct timing for pursuit and pouncing. And the only way they can do that is with that vertical contour to seeing at distances. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do that at all. So it's really creating a 3D image for the brain to understand how do I pursue and how do I pounce. And the field of vision is very different. Dogs have a field of vision of 240 degrees. Cats have 200 degrees. And we only have 80 degrees. But that 200 degrees of vision, if they're eating off the pet platter, their vision is not blocked, which reduces the anxiety when they eat them.
So question. Madison was asking, do cats have peripheral vision?
Yes.
They have a lot more than we do. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you say again the number?
200.
200 for cats, 80 degrees for humans, and dogs have a little bit more at 240.
Wow.
Crazy.
So they're seeing a lot more. And this is why, again, knowing more about how your cat is seeing something, we can't relate to it because everything about our eyesight is quite different.
Right.
We're at 80 degrees. Can you imagine having a 200 degree feel? Mm-hmm. Which is why eating from a bowl is catastrophic for them.
Yeah.
Repeat that, will you? It's
catastrophic.
Cata what?
Is that a new one?
It's you said it.
That's in the Two Crazy Cat Ladies language book, your own dictionary of cat terms.
Beautiful. Catastrophic. How beautiful, though. I mean, back to the basics, though, of just understanding what an incredible species these little beings are and how just... We feed, one of the most consistent things we do, ideally, as cat parents, is feed our cats.
Yeah.
So to be able to do it in a more considerate way, I think this is, yeah, I do.
Just understanding that, like understanding how much of, because, oftentimes we're like, well, there's no way they saw that. There's no way they saw that, you know, somebody yeah. sneaking up on them or something that was like, that looked like it was like behind them or beside them. And you're like, no, there's no way they saw that. Yes, how did, why did, like, how did they, yes, they must be sensing something. Like, yeah. it is
well, realizing just how heightened so many of their senses are compared to ours. Yeah. It really is a very illuminating experience to realize this beautiful species that we have, we think that we're domesticating and yeah. sharing. And then they're so beautiful. They're so intuitive to us humans. Like yeah. they do a really good job of handling us humans as well.
That's true.
Well, now if I see you get contacts with vertical lenses on there.
Do they have those?
They do.
What a great Christmas gift for you guys.
I think it would freak out my babies. I'm not going to do it. They'd be like, wait a minute.
They'd be like, oh, goodness.
The other thing is cats have a third eyelid.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Let's talk about that. Thank you.
Let's talk about this.
They have the upper and lower, of course, but then there's an inner eyelid called the nictitating membrane. And it sits between the lower lid and the eye. And it's usually pink or dark brown. You could go look at your cats and take a peek in there and probably see it. And why they have this is it contains lymphoid follicles. And these follicles actually help cleanse the eye and protect it and to sweep away any debris. And so, for example, them running through the forest, through grass and things like that, things can come in the eye, which can inhibit their vision. And they have to keep that eye clean to be able to see prey in the distance. So this is a way of doing it. But also there's an additional tear film to keep the eye moist. So if something does get in there and it doesn't come out easily, it will tear to clean that eye. And Paul Miller, a veterinarian out of U of Wisconsin in Madison, did the research on that. And again, it relates back to that evolution that makes it so much easier for them to survive.
Wow.
My goodness. So I know that we have a lot of people that reach out to us when they see their cat's third eyelid, right?
Yeah.
Cherry eye is something that people, but in general, I know that there have been a few times, and I think about that with our crazy little wild cats every now and then, where they do go tearing around the house or get into crazy stuff. And you'll kind of see that third eyelid creeping up,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially with Friday, right? And then you might notice a little more tearing. So it's actually like a windshield wiper blade. That's like, incredible.
That's a good analogy.
Totally self-sufficient, right?
You don't need us at all, do you, baby?
He just twitched his ear twice.
He's like, yeah.
Nope.
So we'd be good.
And then I want to talk about two more things. I know we're running a little late, but one relates to color. There's still a certain amount of uncertainty about
how they see color.
How they see color. Some think that, you know, they have the full color spectrum of red, blue, and green. Others think that there is a color missing. But there's one thing that's very important. The cat's vision, especially because of the reflection going on, their eyesight is very blurry, okay? And when you see comparisons that have been done, like trying to document what a cat's vision would be like, it doesn't have, because they don't have cones, which allow color perception, they have very limited cones. The colors tend to be very muted. So if you look at the color of the pet platters, it is the bold, rich hues, both dark and light, which they can see and differentiate between. Okay. If you, that's why we've actually had requests from places like South Korea asking us to come up with pastel color pet platters. Animals can't see them, you know? So there's a method to the madness of why we chose those colors. So if you want to give more color perception to your cat, go for bold, rich colors. And I think you'll see a bit better interaction. And then just the other thing is we use our eyes for the most part, okay? We have the ability to sort of blend out sound in the background and even smell, unless something is really... Cat's vision, because it is so blurry, they rely on different senses to fill in, but the eyes become critically important in hunting and capturing prey and things of that sort. So they live a bit of a different world than we do.
Wow.
Okay. It's much more muted. But again, motion detection and being able to see movement in that distance is a critical part of their life, which is probably why people sit there and go, why is my cat reacting to this? They're seeing something move in the distance.
On the motion though, I think this is so fascinating because there was like a time when we got so many questions about why is my cat knocking over the water dish? Why is my cat playing in the water bowl? And when I was looking into it, it is exactly what you just said, is that cat's eyesight is made for a distance. So if they want water, a lot of times they got to jiggle it to find out exactly where it's at. Like right. They're not made to see right now, like here's the water bowl. I wonder, I'm thinking out loud right now, wondering if you shouldn't come out with a water bowl in a bright, bold cat color for our bit. Just a thought. We'll talk about it
future,
later.
Future.
All I can say is we're working on some things that we're hoping to get out there in the near future.
Nice.
Not mentioning anything specifically.
Not at this juncture, but stay tuned.
Okay. Well, just a few. I always like to end with a few fun facts because I volunteer at the zoo and I'm going to be working with different zoos. And I really hope to encourage people to even look at other animals as well, because it tells you so much about your own animal. But the tapetum lucidum, I have such a hard time saying that, is found in the back of the eye with cats, but in aquatic animals like dolphins, the whole back of the eye is covered in that membrane. And the reason for that is all types of aquatic animals have to go through murky water. Oh. So being able to have everything possibly that is light coming back and reflecting a second time becomes important. So the cat is in the back of the eye. For aquatic animals, it covers the entire back of the eye.
Wow.
That's then
animals with blue eyes and white coats have largely lost the trait of eye shine. And other ones that don't have eye shine are birds, reptiles, rodents, and primates. They've lost it.
Do they know why? Do they know why?
Why they've lost
it? Basically, evolutionary, they just don't need it anymore. It's not relevant to their hunting and everything else. And then domesticated cats can see in lighting conditions that are only 16% as bright as what humans need to see. So it should give you a great appreciation while you're sort of stumbling around. Your cat is in love and life. And that's, one last thing. A lot of people talk to me about, what should my cat's eyes be doing when they're feeding? Okay. And one of the common things we see is that when they know their food is being prepared, their pupils dilate because it's communicating total excitement.
Yeah. Zorro right here. He is the.
You can't see him, but
yeah. But he, when we're preparing food, he is
all about the little leg hugs with his tail and just
so excited.
Yeah.
And then when they're eating, it's interesting. I people have reported different things. It is not atypical for the eyes to almost kind of come close because they're relaxed. If they have their feline feeding territory, they know they're hearing everything that's going on around them. Their whiskers aren't being interfered by any sides. Nothing's hitting into it. So the whiskers are picking up on air temperature, air pressure, and all those other things. So I guess if your cat is having an anxious feeding situation, how dilated those pupils are could be a sign of something is irritating, or they don't feel safe, or there's other activity that may be going on. So I'm just getting more into this. I know cats are all unique in their feeding styles, but you know, eating is usually where they're enjoying, they're relaxing, they're not at that heightened state. They're focused on food selection and consuming. So you may just next time you feed your cat, just take a look at their eyes and see what they're doing and contact the two crazy cat ladies. And we
what's fascinating is just this morning. So we're in the process of doing the integration of our new little beautiful Annie Olivia into the home. And this morning, our Madison was, you could tell that she was just a little extra about, she couldn't quite calm down enough to eat her breakfast. And when she didn't eat her breakfast. But when it was time for lunchtime, you could tell that she was hungry. And what I thought was funny, and I never even thought about watching our cat's eyes when they eat.
Yeah.
Because I've always kind of thought of it as like a vulnerable time. You want to make sure that they're not like up against a wall so that they have like, if they need to be able to see, they can see. But I thought she was like giving her food love eyes. She basically had her eyes. She was taking like slow blinks while she was eating her lunch. And I think that's fascinating. She finally calmed down enough to eat her
eat.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
We are the window into their soul.
Well, and remember, I see some people talking about stainless steel and this and that. The one thing that you want, remember that they see motion detection.
Yes. So
if you have reflections going on in stainless steel, that could cause, you know, sort of a shock because that is coming inbound. Then the other thing is, you know, part of that can be where you serve it to make sure there aren't reflections of that sort. But always remember that motion detection is going to be critical, and that can heighten anxiety.
Wow.
I never thought about that with stainless steel. But I do get why. Janet,
but Madison said
you are winning.
Madison said
having that moving water can be helpful for cats to know, like, this is where it's at. You don't have to dump the water bowl to figure
out. Yeah, and Madison said that she's heard of people putting bright marbles in the bottom of water bowl to help kitties be able to see the sea.
Like perception for
yeah, perception for it. That's interesting too. Because Zorro here, I don't think in his 5 years of life,
I don't think we've ever seen him drink water ever.
Mm. And we've had fountains, and we had stainless steel, we had
ceramic,
and then we had, you know, like we've gone through all the different things, glass, and he's looked at it,
yeah,
and like no, but never drink water.
I mean, that we've seen.
Although,
yeah.
He sees fine just at night, so maybe that's when he's...
Maybe he drinks at night. Well, he gets his moisture from his food, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. So this is more fascinating that I've been so excited about night moves for so long because I just find the eye to be amazing. Not just that they have vertical pupils, not just that they are solitary hunters, they are ambush hunters. Ambush. That they've evolved, that they can see their pupils dilate. I think it's one of the things that we cat people love is watching their pupils dilate. Like, ooh, like you can be having like a little lovey moment and then they see something and their eyes go, right? It's like, what is that? But to better understand why that is and realize just how significant their vision. We're gonna do cat eyes for CatCon this year, not cat ears.
I'm gonna have to send something to you guys, you know? I have lots of crazy ideas.
You might have to custom make it.
Like, this could be the beginning of some good stuff.
Right?
Wow.
Oh God, that's funny.
This is awesome. Thank you.
I'm so grateful to you for all the extra effort. I mean, I love that you've created something that's so useful for our babies, for I hope a lot of people here are able to experience what the pet platter does. Oh. We love doing the charcuterie board for our babies, giving them those different options, spreading things out so that their nose and their whiskers and everything can kind of just take in whatever it is that they want. But to learn all the science behind it, to better understand our best friends is really a gift.
That's what's so exciting about this, right? Like, we met you, we used your platter before we met you. And then we're like, oh, she's the owner of the Mind Pet Platter. We have to meet her. Fell in love immediately. But we used it because it was like, well, this is a good idea. We read the website. We, you know other people, Dr. Judy Morgan, who sent it to
us.
It
makes sense.
We're like, yes, this is a great option. And we saw that our cats loved it. And we're like, winning, you know, this is great. But now to know like all the reasons, like all the
research that went into creating it.
Even the colors. I didn't know that until tonight. I did not know that's why you picked these colors. Like, that's absolutely brilliant. I'm so grateful for everything that
Jana, who actually knows everything there is to know in this world, said, this has been a very educational convo. Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you so much. I cannot wait. We're all going to be on pins and needles until you hear back from your friend in Africa about Henry's Pocket.
And then we're having a party.
But rest assured, this might be the end of the series here, but this is not the end of Dr. Smea. What you bring to the cat community is such a gift. And
we're very grateful.
We're looking forward to growing with you even more, more and growing more.
Thank you. And I can tell you, you guys are a joy to work with and how you're helping spread education and understanding. It's a privilege to be with you. And I know we're going to continue working together. And I just want to say thank you. It is an honor and I look forward to it.
So anything else, we're about to jump off, but anything else you want to say about anything else in the works, or we just want to leave it as a big old tease?
We have some interesting news. Please stay tuned to us.
Okay.
And please know that anything we do related to cats will definitely come to the two crazy cat ladies. They're going to be one of the first to know about it. Working on things right now to not only solve feeding problems and issues that cat parents have, but also to honor the cat themselves and to continue to work towards letting them be the wonderful creatures they are. So please stay tuned, but we're having new things coming out and we're excited about it. So stay with us.